23. The strangest part was that Nan looked so very much the same. Despite the fact that she wore a coverall instead of her colorful patchwork dress, that her bared arms turned out to be thick with tattoos, and that the blue streaks in her hair were matched by lines painted down her face, no great transformation had taken place. Her behavior before hadn't been a disguise, Wreath decided, just another facet of her personality. She was both Nihil warrior and lonely young girl. Which side of her would win out? The only reason Wreath didn't assume it would be the Nihil warrior was the simple fact that she'd gotten the jump on him, yet he remained alive. No point in bothering with preliminaries.
Everything you told me was true, wasn't it?
He asked.
The wreck, your parents, all of it. You just left out the part about being rescued by the Nihil.
Close, but not quite, Nan said.
Her face was blank, unreadable. Her grip on her blaster remained steady.
Our family joined the Nihil together. They offered us the chance for a better life than we could ever have had otherwise. My mother and father were proud of their choice. I'm proud of their choice. When they died in a raid, I was taken in by Hake. By then I knew I'd always be small, that I'd have to learn how to fight smarter, since I'd never be stronger, that I'd need strategic skills. Who better to teach that than a man who can no longer fight with his body and has to use his brain?
The sureness in her voice, the clarity of absolute conviction, unnerved Wreath. He was used to hearing Padawans speak that way, or Coruscant Patrol starfighter cadets. It hadn't occurred to him that anyone could still believe in violence as a creed, at least not by taking such pride in it. While he'd known such mindsets weren't just artifacts from history, this was his first encounter with one. He longed to talk about this with her in depth, to understand the Nihil on their own brutal terms. Getting into a philosophical discussion with a zealot was probably a mistake, though, especially when the zealot was holding a weapon on you.
Makes sense?
Wreath adjusted his stance slightly, as though moving his weight from one leg to another, hoping she wouldn't realize he was triangulating their positions versus the nearest exit.
I can tell you're a great strategist already. You got enough information out of me.
The self-deprecating joke was meant to get Nan off her guard. It didn't work.
I can't claim any credit for that. You were overflowing with explanations, because that was your job, right? To tell the desperate frontier folk how glorious their lives will be now that the Jedi have come?
I don't remember promising anyone glory, he pointed out.
Nan shrugged like, fair enough.
You can stop looking for your escape route. I don't intend to kill you.
Your blaster aim suggests otherwise.
You could deflect any shots,
she said, nodding toward the lightsaber he still hadn't drawn from his belt.
Hand to hand versus a Jedi? Useless. That's one more thing you taught me. When I kill a Jedi, it'll be with my ship.
Wreath considered this.
You could have killed me when my back was turned. You didn't.
No. I haven't forgotten that you saved me from being kidnapped. You returned me to my fleet. That earns you one chance to walk away.
Nan's finger massaged the trigger of her blaster.
One.
Thanks,
Wreath nearly replied, before deciding he really shouldn't have to thank anyone for not blowing him to pieces.
Did you enjoy it, pretending to be helpless?
It's loathsome. I don't intend to make a habit of it.
I can respect that.
You will respect us,
Nan said.
In time, you will bow before the Nihil.
And here I thought this station was as screwed up as it could possibly be before we even docked.
Leox muttered to himself as he stepped over smoldering wreckage from the explosion. Affy had done a number on the place, that was for sure.
The main thing was to make sure the Nihil didn't do a number on her. Sounds echoed from farther down the corridor. Footsteps. Something else. Leox figured that was the Nihil. The Jedi moved as quiet as Tookacats. Quickly, he ducked behind the nearest large piece of debris, a couple of beams that formed a nice solid barrier between him and any marauding warriors.
"Always good to put something between yourself and negative energy," he thought. "Especially armed negative energy."
Despite his lackadaisical habits and disheveled appearance, Leox Jossi had a sharp mind when he cared to employ it. With near-identic precision, he called to mind the layout of the station as they'd previously mapped it, then overlaid Affy's plan for scouting the code. From there, it was relatively simple to figure out how far along in the upper rings she would have gone before the Jedi found themselves in trouble, and therefore where she would have headed back to after the explosion's aftermath. This naturally would require Leox to somehow get past both the Nihil and the idol-controlled area that contained the Drengir. But he wouldn't have had it any other way. How was he supposed to give Affy a proper guilt trip later if it wasn't difficult as hell to get her out? Grinning, Leox waited for his opening, then darted into the station's inner darkness. A voice rang through the station.
Nihil, you are summoned!
Wreath turned, startled. Nan bit her lower lip, then said,
If you want to walk away from this alive, I suggest you do so now. The others are coming. I owe you something, but they don't.
The Nihil wouldn't consider themselves bound by a kindness to one of their own, he thought, filing that away for future reference.
Got it.
He dashed for the nearest doorway, not bothering to glance behind him. If Nan hadn't shot him in the face, she wouldn't shoot him in the back. As soon as Wreath had made it to safe cover, however, he ducked and angled himself to see inside the central globe chamber as best he could. Nan stood exactly where he'd left her, but she wasn't looking after him. Her attention was all for the other Nihil. They didn't wear uniforms exactly, though there was a sameness to their garb. Dark, padded, covered in strips or panels of safety material that would be impervious to water, maybe to fire as well. Their telltale helmets and breath masks hung around their necks or from utility belts, which suggested a gas attack wasn't imminent. As far as Wreath could read their expressions, they seemed neither exultant nor discouraged. That suggested his fellow Jedi remained alive, but the Nihil still felt they could accomplish their goals.
Cloud,
said this Nihil group's leader, a Trandoshan male.
We have a way to prove ourselves to the Tempest Runner.
Grins and a few cheers answered this.
They seemed to use weather imagery, storm imagery, Wreath reasoned.
This station gives us the power to reach any place in the galaxy within moments,
said the leader.
Only our people, not our ships, but our people can make the way ready for the attacks to come. Take down shields, create distractions, send homing beacons. Anything and everything we need to become the dominant power in this part of the galaxy.
Now!
Shouted someone in the back.
In the entire galaxy!
This won more cheers, and the leader smiled.
We thought we would not be able to make up for failure to enter the action. But when we reveal this station, and reveal that by taking it, we have humiliated the Jedi, we'll be in his favor. The best raids, the best position within the Tempest, all of it will be ours.
The Drengir believe they can use this station to wreak havoc across the galaxy,
Wreath thought.
The Nihil believe they can too. Which means if anybody's going to hold this station, it has to be the Republic. But maybe nobody should hold it at all.
Almost at the moment Komak would have given up all hope of finding a clear path, a glint of illumination revealed just enough space clear of debris for him to bring Dez through to the docking ring. Dez tried to make it through on his own, but his movements were still slow, uncoordinated. Komak had to help him every centimeter of the way, practically dragging him at the end. What had the Drengir done to him? What toxic effects did their poisons have? Was Dez recovering, or was a slower-acting substance working its way through his system, tearing him down?
Here we are, see?
Komak adjusted Dez so he could look ahead, into the entrance of the vessel.
Back where we belong.
The Drengir.
No,
Komak said, hoping Dez could truly understand.
They are gone now. They can hurt you no longer.
As he hustled them toward the vessel's airlock, a large shadow in the distance, darker than the other shadows, caught Komak's eye for only an instant. In the next, he could see nothing there. But it had looked like... it couldn't have been. Komak muttered,
"Geode?"
The scent of smoke clung to Affy. It seemed to have embedded itself in her clothes, her hair, even her skin. She longed for that incredible bathtub in Scover's fancy Coruscant hotel room. But that was too close to longing for Scover for Affy's approval. She couldn't think about that as she crawled back into the guts of the Amaxine station. Her loyalty to Scover couldn't exist with her desire to erase the illegal practices that apparently formed such a large part of the Bind Guild's prosperity. Her love for her adoptive mother was at war with her love for the biological mother she'd lost so long before.
She'll see how much better it is to do without it,
Affy reasoned as she crawled.
She'll be happier knowing her pilots are safe. I won't have to turn anything in. Just show my proof to her and she'll back down. It'll teach her a lesson in the best possible way.
Next up on Affy's list of places to search was the station's gravitational matrix. It was located up high, near the very top of the sphere. Instead of crawling, it was time to climb. When she found the access tube that led upward, her heart sank. It was narrow and showed more signs of age than most other areas of the station. Just with the beam of her glow rod, she could make out several places where panels were missing, exposing wires. There was no other illumination in the tube, meaning she'd have to make her way upward in the dark. And vines had grown through holes and slits in the walls, curling all around the tube ladder's rungs. That would make it slippery, but Affy told herself the tube was almost too narrow for her to fall. At least the ATs were busy. She began working her way upward, glow rod tied to her utility belt so the beam would point up. Instead of clarifying her path, it swayed back and forth, casting eerie, wobbling shadows. The vines on the ladder were even trickier to work around than she'd thought, because the slightest pressure sent sap running down the rungs and across her palms. And by then, she understood that no matter how narrow the tunnel was, she could still plummet all the way down. She'd just be more likely to break a limb along the way.
Keep going,
she told herself, ignoring the trembling in her muscles as she pulled herself even higher up.
You have to keep going.
Affy!
The echoing voice startled her so badly she nearly lost her grip. Swearing under her breath, Affy steadied herself and pointed the glow rod's beam downward.
Leox, what are you doing here?
He'd stuck his head through the access hatch, which showed her just how dangerously high up she was.
Getting you off this station immediately. I'm not done. Doesn't matter anymore. See, the Drengir want this station. The Nihil want this station. Once they find out about it, my guess is the Republic's gonna want this station too, and if not, they'll blow it to smithereens. Regardless, this place isn't Bind Guild territory anymore. Even if the Republic leaves it intact, there's no way Scover can keep using it. Code or no code, no other pilots are going to be forced through here. Not ever.
That should have made Affy feel better, but it didn't.
That's not enough.
Why?
She ignored this. I have to keep going. You're not trying to save the other pilots any longer, Leox said.
If that was all this is about, you'd have started down that ladder already. What you're trying to do is save Scover's soul. That's not your job, Affy. Only Scover herself can do that.
Affy leaned her head against the nearest rung of the ladder. Her hands itched. The sap irritated her skin. Leox wasn't wrong about her reasons. She could see that. But turning back still felt so wrong.
Affy, please.
The raw pleading in Leox's voice got to her.
Your life's not worth one bit less than hers. If you ask me, it's worth a whole lot more. So will you get back down here?
She held on for one moment longer, envisioning her long-lost parents in this same tube. If they'd had a way out, they would have taken it. They would have wanted her to be safe. It was for them, not for Leox, not even for herself, that Affy finally began descending toward safety. Recon around the station had only darkened Orla's take on their chances. She saw no strategic areas to take that would give them an advantage over the Nihil. It only took a few scans to confirm the enormous scale of the Nihil ship. The vessel would stand no chance in a space battle against it. They literally had no option but to run away and hope they weren't seen. And with access to the vessel so limited and hazardous, she wasn't even sure they'd get a chance to run. And where the heck was Affy?
You need more time, she told herself. So you have to buy some somehow.
The best way of buying time from an enemy was usually to create a distraction by making a mess so big that the Nihil would keep themselves busy cleaning it up while the vessel got away from the Amaxine station.
Exactly how much bigger a mess can I make? The place is already on fire.
Then it hit Orla.
I take a mess we already cleaned up and make it messy all over again.
If the Jedi had had so much trouble fighting the Drengir and so much trouble fighting the Nihil, Orla could hardly imagine the trouble they'd have fighting each other. Sometimes bottling up the darkness only made it stronger. Sometimes you had to let it go.